So we are not the body, we don't have to fear to die because only the body dies?
We can say, you know, you say, you know, we are not the body, so we don't have to fear when the body dies. But it's very difficult for that, for those words or that teaching or that concept to really enter behind the very solar plexus of being itself. Because underneath, this is a firm, even amongst people who have been practicing spirituality for many years, still it is found, this firm belief, I am the body at the end of the day.
I know this also. Yes.
Yeah. And it's easy to say, it's now almost a kind of cliche to say, I'm not the body, I'm not any of these things. But for that to be really an admission that pours out of that untouched, uncreated space in pure recognition of itself, is, I think, it's very rare, actually. You see, because quite often, underlying all other practices, still there's a belief, I'm still doing all of this for me, for my benefit, to secure my freedom. And this my indication is not tackled, it's not looked into deeply.
That's an interesting one, yeah. I did some practices for some time, and at a stage the practices dropped. But I never related it to that maybe this I-driven longing for achievement might have been the driving force of that.
Yes, and it's not easily detected. It's not easily detected. Because finally, behind any practice, is the sense of a practicer also.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm. You see, and it's not enough to say there's no practice, there's no practicer. You see, it's easy for the intellect to express these statements, but really, to really have it driven out, that delusion, I'm calling it, it really takes a continuous checking in and looking and confirming and verifying and a sense of letting go. Somehow some things are sort of let go. I cannot teach it. I cannot put a technique of letting go. Just when the seeing is there and then some fear comes up, or some fear that has been holding the sense of being a person together begins to crumble, and then somehow it brings up, it's a kind of vomiting, and it's not a pleasant state sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a kind of reflex in us to return to what is apparently knowable and you know, what is some kind of certainties, but they are still based in the mind. Sometimes it happens like that. But having said that, I don't want to say something that is seemingly discouraging, because it is still a movement away from the idea we have of who we are into our living being. And so there's ultimately nothing to fear. Is this sort of the loosening of the grip of a deluded identity that creates so much stirrings, so much sometimes doubts, they come up at that moment. But they, if you are with a teacher, let's put it like this, or someone who can encourage you to say, look, don't worry, this, just stay as you are. Don't buy into that noise. Or look, who is speaking these words? Who is raising these doubts? And really go into it and look, then all of that superstructure of conditioning, negative or even positive conditioning, begin to just somehow have a meltdown. And what is revealed when the curtain is pulled apart, somehow, is your own imageless being. And the mind cannot paint a picture of that being that can be accurate. It's not known in that way. It's not known in that way. It's an internal knowing. It's a non-dualistic knowing, or a non-dualistic recognition, a non-phenomenal recognition. Sometimes I'm calling it like this. But if we're too literal in our thinking, then we won't comprehend what I'm saying. But for those who have really been looking, you will see what it's speaking, why these words are coming like that. Because there's no other way I can find to express that.
That's the crux of language.
Yes. And it is good that it has a limit. It is good that language has as a limit also. Because then, because it cannot be held inside language. It has to transcend language. It has to transcend teaching, because the truth is not a teaching. You know, it's not anything that can be described with the faculties of the intellect and the mind and all of these. It's beyond all of that. It's beyond. Not beyond in terms of time and space, but beyond in terms of subtlety and purity. So not beyond that way, but beyond this way.
Laugh comes, so
yes, often laughter comes.
We have come as far as one can with language.
It is good, because if it stays within the grasp of language, then the ego will take hold of it, the mind will take hold of it.
That seems to be that seems that mind needs language, and language is somehow defined by our mind is defined by language, and language is defined by mind. They depend on each other.
And it is. It also has to. The truth also has to ring through in the mind. Also, the sound. Yes. It has to also be felt there. It's the first. Sometimes it's the. It can be the first port of call somehow. That. There's an understanding, and that understanding also, because mind in its core is not different from the self.
Of course not.
Our natural mind is not different from the source. But mind in the aspect as person, then somehow it is not reliable, because it's not what the beingness is. The beingness, the person is only a mask over the beingness. It has no reality of its own.
It's just a bundle of thoughts. That's how I used to express it. Somehow it seems to be put together by thoughts which are believed in, somehow intuitively driven by conditionings or originated by conditionings and all the...
Yes. I feel this is the game. I look at it as the game of existence, of consciousness. And I came slowly to look at it in a soft way, that it's not you know a kind of a punishing lie or something. I see that as it's seen through our true nature, then even the play of ourselves as persons and life and object and duality is not a threat. It loses the threat. It doesn't have to vanish like into thin air. It's simply just the play of because duality for me is not a mistake. It's not a dirty word, because without it there can be no experience. But it's I find the highest aspect of it is that it becomes a pure reflection in which the absolute can somehow recognize itself through manifestation or something like that. But it just seems that whilst its expression goes like this, manifesting as consciousness and dipping its face into its own projection as the manifest world, a kind of forgetfulness occur. Because I cannot say that it forget itself. It doesn't seem enough to say that. It's beyond the state of forgetting and remembering. But in its aspect as duality, then it appears to forget itself, and by forgetting itself, it then believes itself to be the constructor and the body, and then the delusion can increase. The illusions can seem real. They become tangible and real. And if spirituality means anything, it is really a sieving out of what are only appearances, and what remain is that which cannot really be divided, cannot be pushed apart, has no image and beyond.
First it
comes to a point where I call that state of beingness, or the state I am, the state of existence, announcing itself in the body, in the feeling I am. And I say that I amness state is the purest expression or manifestation of the absolute in the manifest world. And somehow this I am consciousness, this amness, is not a man or a woman. It has no religion. It is consciousness that as soon as it begins to express through the instrument of the body, it seems unavoidable that some identification arises with the body, and then the belief arises, I am the body. Whether that is introduced by parents or society at large or whatever, I call it, it's introduced by consciousness itself anyway. And then the belief, I am the body, gives a sense of autonomy and individuality and personality and privacy and all of this. And for a while, consciousness enjoys this aspect of itself, feels proud of it. It loves to be an individual, to be private, and to think for itself, and to have the sense of personal evolution, and all of this is all part of what I call the dance of existence. But it seems for many beings, at a certain point, there is, triggered by whatever, there becomes a longing for a deeper understanding. It may not be conscious at first, but at some point it gets recognized that there is some urge inside to solve what seems to be the riddle of the existence. Why am I here? Some people are asking. Why am I here? You know, who really am I? If this question arises for some, for others, their temperament might be more devotional, or they find the feeling of surrendering much more to their, you know, appropriate to their own temperament. So it's all being pulled by the same single power to go beyond the limitations of the ego identity and to somehow slip back into that universality, which is our more stable being. Then,
I sometimes think, in the end of the day, I mean, what happened here? There was a separate individual, a belief, separate individual, and full of concepts, and somehow order came into this. So the mind is no longer a concept creator, but it is more an instance which helps solve day-to-day problems. There was one guy called Ramesh Balsekar who made a distinction between a thinking mind and a working mind. And the mind functionality, in good order, in the order that I would propose, is to just a working mind.
Yes.
Solving specific problems. And somehow, to me, it seems that there is a period in life, probably when we are young people or during studying school time, when a lot of concepts are planted into us. We want to understand the world, we look around, we figure it out, how it works, and there are a lot of ideas are generated, and some are in our heads, and then they are combined into more and more complex concepts, and suddenly some wild explanations come and a perception or a creation of reality which later then in life is questioned. So why am I here? So what is the sense behind all of this? And then the whole building, which was built up over decades, can break down when with the right technology, techniques, or attitude, or I don't know. It would not even call
yes,
it.
Yes, it's it, Yes, yes, yes. And the attitude itself sprouts spontaneously. Awesome. I mean, what causes one particular, in one expression, bodily expression of consciousness, a complete recognition, deep and contented recognition of that eternal truth, and in another, frustrated practices, what can determine this? We don't know. But my stand is that all are that. This is where I keep coming back. We are already that. Whether we can really comprehend, and I don't want to stop at merely saying you are that, because where the doubts arise, and they will arise, I'm here to guide you through sometimes some questions or whatever, so that becomes your authoritative discovery, not merely a belief, because as a belief it's not enough. It has to become your own truth, your own discovery. Then you may speak with the authority of one who has really seen, not second-hand, not borrowed knowledge, but true. Even I would say beyond even conviction, truth beyond even conviction. You see, so you're right when saying, you know, of course, that aspect of the mind must be retained for daily function. This nothing, no problem, because it doesn't leave any footprints in the consciousness, particularly. It's just functioning.
Yes.
But the kind of psychological thinking, which becomes also part of our a kind of trap, or just informational thinking, it does create a kind of inner claustrophobia, conceptual claustrophobia.
Exactly.
For many people. And I feel that it seems to me, sometime in looking, that perhaps one of our great suffering states for modern personnel is the lack of inner space. We are so full of information, of what seems to have come to be really to make things easier, but somehow we don't have as yet the capacity to really not get sucked into that kind of fragmented state of mind.
Yes. Somehow I did some meditation over years, but I did not consciously, I did not know about non-duality. I had no clue about that. And all these concepts I did not know.
Yeah.
But what I noticed in these meditations, somehow, and this is very subtle what I say now, is somehow it seems that the play of mind somehow was seen subtly. And the trust in these thoughts which mind produces all the time somehow became weaker and weaker.
Yeah? Yes, yes, yes.
This can only be said in retrospective. When this process was going on, it was not so clear. It was just somehow it felt becoming a little bit more relaxed with the time, and the confidence and trust in the concepts became weaker. Now I must say, any concept that mind potentially can come up with, and I'm not talking about the working mind, any concept can only be a thought. And how real is a thought? Not at all. I did not find a single thought that is true for everybody. So all of this is good.
If you can come, as you've said, to recognize that nothing, actually, no object or thought has what I would say a single inherent meaning.
Yes.
Then that is already something very broad. Then you see that the thoughts in themselves have no power. They only have power when they are believed in.
Yes.
By themselves, they don't have this power.
judgments don't make sense. What is bad then? So all bad and even good also, even good. They somehow they lose their bite and it becomes more peaceful. So there is no two.
Something is left to life itself to play through our own inner being, because I don't want to fix and to say even where is right and where is wrong, because sometimes I feel where there's right and there's wrong, and sometimes I feel it's not right or wrong. There are always some new shades come. Don't want to be absolutely, you know, sometimes you have to express something that this is really incorrect, because that is the appropriate expression in that time. Another time you say, well, there's no such thing as right and wrong. This is what seems to be like the paradox, because often you are not just addressing a question or a situation, but you are addressing the particular questioner. And so what can be sometimes, what will be appropriate for one person, spontaneously is coming the response that, okay, this thing is really, this was a very big mistake you make here. You see? Mm-hmm. And that feels totally authentic and appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Another time for somebody else, the feeling is, no, forget about this thing about right and wrong too much now. Just leave all of that and stay in just the space of neutrality. Don't let your mind plunge into judgment. Stay here.
Mm-hmm.
And yet for another one, we're saying nothing at all exists. You see? But even it's changing depending upon, and spontaneously also. It's not anything that we rehearse.
This is something that, for example, between the two of us now, somehow there is some kind of a communication, and you would probably say consciousness is playing with itself somehow. So I don't know. And there is resonances and whatever is going on there, and these decide about the expressions. One expression can be rejection of a deed which is seen, and another one can.
Yes.
Say, okay, now neutral is nice, and another one can...
I think this is really healthy, because then it shows again, because it shows once again, that there can be no situation or thought or anything that is phenomenal that we can somehow label, like, this is constant, this is totally dependable.
Exactly.
And I feel this is the health of the consciousness itself, because then it means that you must go further than this. You cannot find anything that is in the phenomenal manifest world, so to speak, that you can say, this is true for everyone. And therefore, sometimes I've said to people that we are never going to achieve this feeling like, this world peace through our concepts. You can only go beyond, again, into that purity before concepts arise, not to be afraid of concepts, but to go beyond them.
Yes.
And then you return to your universality, which doesn't rely upon these concepts, these divisions, this kind of hierarchies in order to be. You find food. You come to a state where one is in smooth affinity with all expressions, and there's an understanding of them. And it's not something that is planned through the mind. It's much too spontaneous to be called mind. Something arises and it's really fitting, appropriate to the needs of the moment. It's more an intuitive. The life becomes much more intuitive, more spontaneous, less rehearsed, less strategy. And this, I would say, more, these are the fragrances of more what I would call the natural being. The rehearsed life, the kind of planned strategies, the kind of forceful way, these are to do with our culture, to do with our own kind of conditioning, and we will never come to a universality in this way. We may try and appear as such, but underneath that, something will always unmask us and see that there is some inconsistency, there is some hypocrisy in our way. You have to truly plunge backwards again into that space, which is before concepts arise, and it is there. This is what the human being has a chance to discover, that beyond the limited field of the mind, which can seem unlimited in its own way, there is a space of pure being. And here is where I would say there exists pure love. Love meaning the unity of being, the unicity of being. And all the other aspects of love can then find their correct expressions. And here is also the peace which no one has to keep. No one has to be the keeper of peace. One is oneself peace, where there's harmony, but there's no one to keep the harmony. Oneself is the harmony itself. When your intuitive powers are completely alive, but there's no one keeping or developing intuition. There's no somebody living life. There is just life. You are life itself. So what I speak when I speak like this, there's no poetry about it. I speak only what is very clear to see. And I see that such a wonderful opportunity is existing in life. But it's not entirely down to the person as such. The person is only a wave within the great ocean. But each wave has the total ocean underneath its movement. It has no real autonomy to decide where to go, how big to grow, anything like this. It doesn't have that. Just apparently it has it.
And it can be relaxed in this... Yeah, it can be relaxed on the ocean, basically, yeah?
Oh, this is... Yes, really relaxed, but
not even... It's relaxed just by nature, not by effort.
Yeah. So yes. Nobody can do it. Yeah. It's just somehow, again, the attempt to express it in words. So.
The self is also present even in the ego. The self is also present even in the ego. So the ego also, if it were not like that, the ego could not stand a chance. The ego is sipping through the drinking straw that is dipped into the ocean of self.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it has nothing at all, you know. It only makes the mistake that somehow it feels like it has a true autonomy or something like this. It's a mistake that consciousness has designed for itself to experience in the form of individuality for a while. That's one way I can put it.
Yeah.